switch. Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Guy James Show. I told you we'd be here today, and here we are. Got a live program for you, a couple hours of good talk radio, and we hope you're ready for it. And we do invite you to join us, as always, at 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254, and we do hope you'll join us on the program today. Want to welcome all the folks over at the Head On Radio Network chat room. See, we got a lively group in there today. And we want to welcome all of our folks at iTunes that they're currently listening in on the iTunes link. We're so glad to have you along with us now. We hope some of you will start calling in the program. Get your, get your bravery all ready. You know, I'll do it. I'll call. There's nothing to it, really, and we'll treat you real nice. As long as you treat us nice, we'll be nice to you. So welcome to the iTunes, folks. We haven't. I don't think I mentioned that earlier this week, yesterday. So. Call the show, 866-546-5254. I want to say happy Valentine's Day to everybody that celebrates that schmaltzy kind of stuff. I do. And I know most people are, I don't know about most people. I was at the grocery store this morning, and one wonders whether it was actually a grocery store or a flower store. My, did they have lots of flowers in there today. And I imagine they're mostly gone by now. I was looking up some of the history of Valentine's Day. Kind of vague, I think. I don't think anybody actually knows. There's several theories out there where Valentine's Day, several stories, but I don't think they actually know. It says as early as the 4th century B.C., the Romans engaged in an annual young man's rite to passage to the god Lupercus. Never heard of that one before. The names of the teenage women were placed in a box and drawn at random by adolescent men. Thus, a man was assigned a woman companion for the duration of the year, after which another lottery was staged. And after 800 years of this cruel, 800 years that went on, 800 years they drew lots out of a box every year for a companion for the year? Oh, there was obviously no women's movement at that time. Oh, they wouldn't get away with that for 15 minutes nowadays. And it said the early church fathers sought to end this practice, and they found an answer in Valentine, a bishop who had been martyred some 200 years earlier. According to church tradition, Saint Valentine was a priest near Rome in about the year 270 A.D., and at that time, the Roman Emperor Claudius II, who had issued an edict forbidding marriage. Oh. They weren't allowed to get married. I know a lot of guys that would like that deal. Yes, I do. I'm not kidding. I know guys. I know some guys that would like that deal. Law against getting married. I know some guys who fought valiantly against getting married, but finally did. Anyway, when Valentine he was thrown in prison, and while in prison awaiting his fate, he came in contact with his jailer, Asterius, and the jailer had a blind daughter, and Asterius requested him to heal his daughter. Through his faith, he miraculously restored the sight of Asterius's daughter, and just before his execution, he was beheaded, by the way, he asked for a pen. Was that a ballpoint? Oh, okay, and a pen and paper from his jailer, and signed a farewell message to her from your Valentine, a phrase that lived ever after. So, there you have it. The history of Valentine's Day. The Valentine's Day card spread with Christianity and now is celebrated all over the world. It didn't really know it had that much of a connection to Christianity. One of the earliest cards was sent in 1415 by Charles, Duke of Orleans, to his wife while he was a prisoner in the infamous Tower of London. And that card is now preserved in the British Museum. Well, ain't that special, as they would say. The British have a card that's almost 600 years old, a Valentine's card. So anyway, welcome. I hope everybody got candy and flowers and all that sort of thing. Yes, 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 yes. I did too. I got the flowers. They're in the right kind of water right now, and the cards are waiting, and probably a dinner this evening as well. Don't go out much this time of year around here with all the snowbirds here. It takes a brave person to go out in the traffic and go wait in lines at whatever restaurant you want to go to, because all of them are smart enough not to take reservations. They know their places are going to be full, regardless of whether they take reservations or not. And having been a restaurateur one time in my life, I can tell you that Valentine's Day, if you take reservations, it can lead to a lot of trouble. To say the least, it can lead to a lot of trouble. Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. It's funny, Mother's Day in a restaurant, biggest day of the year, and Father's Day, nothing. Same way with Valentine's Day, the girls all get taken out to dinner and get the flowers and candy and all that sort of stuff, but the guys, you know how it is. I guess it's our way of, another way of thanking the ladies for doing all they do all year round and for being our sweethearts and putting up with us and all of that. Some of us are very hard to get along with. Some of us are, we're like children. I know a lot of people who are like children, adults anyway. But welcome to the Guy James Show. I'm Guy James, and you're not. Awfully glad to have you along with us today. And again, the phone number, 866-546-5254. So much being talked about in the news about a possible attack on Iran. We'll get to that in a little bit. I'm going to do something I don't usually do on this program. I don't usually stick up for Junior Bush. I had about, last time I counted, 15 or 16 emails concerning what Junior Bush said this morning in his press conference, and he made the statement, "Sometimes money trumps peace." And yes, in fact, he did say that, but I'm going to defend him this time and say that he wasn't particularly mentioning, and I read the whole thing several times and heard the audio. He wasn't saying that money trumps peace in this country specifically. He was saying money trumps peace in, this is what I think he was saying, money trumps peace sometimes, some places. And he's right. It does. Money does trump peace many times. I think money trumps peace, although he probably wasn't referring to the United States of America. I'm fairly sure that money has trumped peace in this Bush war of his. So inadvertently he got around to describing himself there, but I don't think that's what he meant to say. But who am I to argue what Junior Bush meant to say, and sometimes try and figure out his absolutely tortured logic. And I was watching some of these House members earlier today. We have our computer set up in here so that we can watch TV on it, C-SPAN and the like. And some of these guys getting up and giving these speeches in the House. Oh man. That's gonna go on for another day or two from what I understand. Blah, 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 blah. What they might as well say, what they should say when they get up there is, any of the Republicans who are against this non-binding resolution that they're trying to get through, every Republican that gets up and defends their vote against it should say, I am up here because I live in a safe district, and I've got nothing to lose, and I can say any damn thing I want to, and the people in my district, numbskulls that they are, will reelect me over and over and over again because I support Mr. Bush, and they do as well. I'm surprised. I haven't heard him yet, but I would say that useless scoundrel that is my congressman, Mr. Connie Mack, I would say that he'll probably get up and speak if he has the time from, you know, breaking away from his sweetheart there, the Bono woman. I don't know if his divorce is through yet or not. I don't want to criticize anybody for getting a divorce, but when you run for office and everything's hunky-dory and happy family that's shown to the public in the pictures and so forth, and about 15 minutes after you're sworn in, you're all of a sudden dating the Bono woman and saying so long to the little woman. Why, you know, you do have to wonder a little bit about that. But anyway, he may very well be up there speaking in the next day or two because he lives in a safe district. And as I have mentioned to you, he lives in a safe district because, you want to know how safe? So safe that Catherine Harris carried this area. All right? That's how safe it is. Don't know how long it'll take to ever live that down. Don't have to defend it around here, but... And I was checking the logic of some of these guys, and you know the logic, it just doesn't fly. You know, stop and think of the logic of this whole thing, and as well, for this arms thing from Iran, for example. The Iranian government, it's claimed, is giving weapons to Iraqis that those Iraqis are using to kill Americans. Okay? That's what they're claiming. The Iraqis fighting the U.S. says, are mostly Sunnis. And Iran is a Shiite nation and backs the Iraqi Shiites. Why would the Iranian government give weapons to their allies' enemies? Can anybody tell me that? The Iranian government, Shiite government in Baghdad, why the hell would the Iranian government give weapons to their allies' enemies? Seems kind of odd. They probably wouldn't, would they? But it goes back to the old thing, you know, the Bush administration said a lot of things about weapons and justify, you know, the threats to justify an invasion of Iraq. And every single one of those claims turned out to be wrong. So it could well be one of those things that happens again right now. And talking out of both sides of their mouths, here we are, we've got that little weasel, what's his name, we were talking about him yesterday, Adam Putnam from Florida, and a lot of these guys are saying the same sentiments, a lot of these Republicans are getting up there. Putnam, host of the War Room, I guess he put on quite a production before he went up to speak yesterday, wringing his hands and standing in the back of the house and getting himself all pumped up and ready. He called a news conference in the Capitol basement with Boehner and distributed orange juice made with fruit his family had grown in Florida. Sipping the juice, he repeated his dueling points. A, this is just the first step to defunding the troops in harm's way. And B, this week's resolution is really just a stunt. So if my question to Mr. Putnam and so many of the Republicans, if in fact this is just a stunt, then why are they worried about it? How can you say in the one breath that this is just the first step to defunding troops in harm's way, and in the next breath say it's just really a stunt? Hey, believe me, boys. If this is, in fact, the first step to defunding troops, or defunding the war for Bush, then it's not a stunt. I will assure you that. If, in fact, the Democrats use this as the first step to defund this war, it's definitely not a stunt. So I think, Adam, old boy, you might want to check out your logic on that one just a little bit. Hey, let's go with the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Guess you're not. You have to call back if that was you. 866-546-5254. The U.S. military, and along the same vein, said Tuesday that its decision to go public... Now put yourself in these people's frame of mind here and try and fathom this as the truth somehow. The U.S. military said Tuesday that its decision to go public with allegations that Iran is providing militants in Iraq with weapons was not politically motivated or orchestrated by the White House. Major General William Caldwell, the U.S. command's top spokesman, said the decision to air the allegations against Iran on Sunday was made by the U.S. military and stemmed from concerns that Iran has been supplying militias with a deadly type of roadside bomb that could pierce thick armor. Our decision, he says, to publicly release this information was conceived, coordinated, and ultimately decided here at the U.S. military headquarters in Baghdad, he said in an email. Does this bring up visions of mission accomplished to anybody? White House didn't know anything about it, and then we find out that, you know, they blamed it on the Navy, and then we find out the White House coordinated the entire thing. Does anybody older than three, with any knowledge at all of what goes on in the world, does anybody think that for one moment the military command in Baghdad would have that little show they had the other day and publicly release this information about these weapons without complete, without the big okay from the White House? I don't think so. I mean, that if that isn't a fat lie, I don't know what is. No, we did it all on our own. We just thought, you know, we'd do this. We'd go right around the White House. We wouldn't ask them if they wanted to. Yeah, right. You'd have to be a complete moron to believe that line. And, of course, we know where there are about 30% of the people in the United States who are. You know. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Well, I guess somebody's having a little fun with us. Hey, we're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute. Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show, has sent us some tunes especially for Valentine's Day. And you might think, well, those aren't political talk show type music. And today, you're right. Today, these are beautiful Valentine songs that the ladies will like and some of the guys will like as well. And they're especially for this day. So, let's just go with one here. Dino.
I have but one heart, this heart I bring you. I have but one heart to share with you. I have but one that I can cling to. I pray comes true. My darling, until I saw you, I never felt this way, and nobody else before you ever has heard me say.
Country comes to mind when you hear this. The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Oh, what a spoiled sport we've got on the group we've got on the chat room today. Evidently didn't like Dino. It's Valentine's Day, people. Come on. We're supposed to be all loving and nice and all that good stuff today. Yeah. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call the show, and we hope you will. 866-546-5254. I was thinking, I do that sometimes, I was thinking something kind of radical, a little bit radical anyway. We would have been better off when this whole war started to have bought Iraq. And here's what I was thinking. Now stick with me on this. We're close to the $500 billion mark for this, and it's going to end up costing us a lot more than that, so I won't have any trouble justifying my figures here. Before this is over, we'll be at the trillion-dollar mark. Even the CBO is thinking that. So, yeah, I think it would have been cheaper to buy Iraq than to shock and awe and bomb it and all that sort of stuff. I do. $500 billion for war, if you sit down and get your little calculator out and figure this all out, that's the same as giving every Iraqi about $20,000. Every single one of them men, women, and children, $20,000 apiece. That's a lot of money in Iraq. Unless you happen to be one of those guys that got in on the cash with Bremer, the how many million dollars thrown out the back of pickup trucks to people in $100 bills. If Bush had allowed free market forces to operate in Iraq, he could have paid every Iraqi $20,000 just to move out of the country. And are you telling me that a lot of those folks there, or most of them anyway, $20,000 cash, they'd have gone. Oh yeah, they would have gone. So a family of five would have had $100,000 to start over with someplace else. And when you stop and take a look at the Iraqi refugee crisis, where the Iraqis are leaving the country by the thousands, the tens of thousands, without a dime to their name, looks like a pretty good deal for everybody. Would have been a good deal for the American taxpayer, because we're going to end up paying at least $1 trillion. And think of the interest on all those, on that $1 trillion that we borrowed from the Chinese and the Japanese in order to bomb Iraq. That's not even counting the interest. And so how, we, you know, you might be thinking, how could we have profited from all that? Well, if the Iraqis left, we would have, in essence, bought the country, and we could claim the oil left behind and sell it to Exxon and Shell and Chevron. And, for example, just using Exxon's quarterly profits for the next 10 years, we could double our money that we laid out to buy Iraq. I'm just thinking of some good old Republican conservative business here, that's all. We could double our money. It's just a win-win situation. And here's another sad fact you might want to think about. We're paying approximately $150 million to get an American killed. That's what it comes out to. $150 million for each one of our people that's died. Don't want to equate the lives and money together. But besides losing the 3,126 or however many it is today, it's also cost about $150 million for the deaths of each one of those soldiers. My God. How utterly stupid are we in this country anymore? How can it be that we're that completely stupid? That does bother me. It really does bother me. So, anyway, we're going to pause for another quick break. We got a little technical problem here right now, and we're going to solve it, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go anywhere.
He was waiting for the bus in his army green, sat down in a booth in a cafe there, gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile, and he said, would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low. She said, I'm off in an hour, and I know where we can go. So they went down and they sat on the pier. He said, I bet you got a boyfriend, but I don't care. I got no one to send a letter to. Would you mind if I sent one back here to you? Don't worry, but I won't be able to write.
Okay, hey, we're back. We've got our technical trouble all taken care of. We had somebody ringing the doorbell here at the studio, and I brought the official Guy James Show puppies in today, and they were barking like crazy at the door. Usually we don't have people come to the door here, and anyway, they brought a nice Valentine's gift here, so thank you. Very nice. So anyway, we're back, and we got that technical trouble all taken care of. That's what you have when you have a one-man band here, producer, director, and the whole thing. Bound to be some funny things happening now and then. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil. All the way up north there.
Yeah, right. Well, it is quite a ways, isn't it? People don't realize the size of Florida. But when you said the doorbell, I thought you were going to say that the show was coming out the doorbell and the phone wasn't working. But anyway, I'm very concerned about Iran and how once again the language is the same as far as the media is selling it, and the same cast of characters in the government selling it, the same talking heads on the cable channels, and they're using the same words, Guy. And already it seems like there's been a shift where, like with Iraq, now it seems like people are already thinking that it's inevitable.
Oh, yeah, it does. I think a lot of people are just taking it for granted that it's going to happen.
You see what I mean? And that's like people are not fighting it. This is insane, man. This is already the first go around was if I understand the international law and all that, a war crime. Attacking a country that hasn't attacked you?
In my opinion, it certainly was. And, you know even the first time you might be able to understand that the public, okay, got duped. A lot of the Congress critters got duped and went along with it. But the second time, you have to wonder.
Well, you know what? If it's not, it's obvious to me, but I don't know to the other folks watching, this Congress is going to let it happen again. They're going to let it happen again, it appears.
So it appears. It does.
And you know, this whole bull crap about, you know, Iraq resolutions, that's got nothing to do with three now. We're talking three naval strike forces, three carrier groups. Another one sailed, a week or two ago?
Yeah, I think they're sending the Reagan.
Yeah, and they've got all sorts of attack subs in the Gulf over there. And if anything, this debate over non-binding resolutions with the escalation in Iraq is basically keeping us from paying attention to what's going on with Iran. And I thought about something you talked about, your congressman Connie Mack, you know, and I was wondering, Guy, if the media on the local level, you know, perhaps we can move them to confront the representatives in our own local areas, as opposed to just reporting after the fact. Have you had any experience with that or any ideas about that?
No. You know, where we live here, it's such a red area. Our newspapers, our radio stations, all that. I mean, of course, I don't depend on any of that for news coming from any place else. It'd be the last place in the world I'd want to get my news. If you could read the letters to the editor here, you would know why.
Well, we got some up here too.
Oh, it's vicious.
But you know, I'm talking about if the people, because the Congress is not going to stop this unless the people rise up and give enough heat. And if there are people in there, you know, what I run across is people don't want to see this happen, but they're stuck in the place of, well, what can I do?
Well, they are, and we find ourselves once again, and I say we, I don't include you and me and all of our listeners, I think, in that. We're being conditioned once again. They're gradually massaging the press over this. They're just a little bit of here and a little bit there, and it's just all coming together very nicely for them. And, you know, Bush sits there and smiles, no, I don't have any plans to attack Iran. And when you know damn well, in the back room, the plans, the map's on the wall.
Well, it's been on the wall since the 90s, you know, the whole PNAC game plan. But I want to, maybe some of the other callers or some of the other listeners, we have to find a way where we can get to these damn representatives, which is the word is, what's the word that it really means? The opposite, what do you call that? Representatives is like the poorest choice of words for these guys.
Yeah, they certainly don't.
You know, but how we can try to get our own, try to put heat on our own local media to say, look, we want to know where our representative is going with this Bush plan to, we don't want, we've seen this before, are you guys going to, not question it again? You know, you guys gonna not be the fourth estate again? We don't want you to do that. I'm wondering what we folks can do, because there's enough folks concerned. It's just there's not a plan to carry out on the local level.
Well, I have to wonder, you know, most of these TV companies nowadays and radio companies are they're multiple ownership, many.
Yeah.
You know, and many of them are as right-wing as you can be. I know there's certainly a lot of them, almost all of them. Believe me, and I can tell you, I especially can tell you, having been bounced from three AM radio stations in this area, it's just hardcore, and you can't get any of them to listen to anything. I mean, they just won't.
I'm thinking more of the print media guy. You know, where you actually, you might have still one or two actual reporters left, you know, where we can lobby perhaps the news editor, you know, which does government or focuses on Washington or military, and say, hey, look, this is the same thing playing out. You know, we want you to confront our representative on this and make them answer, you know.
Well, they'll not get an answer out of my representative. You got what, Feeney up there?
We got Feeney and Micah, and you know, actually Feeney's given somewhat opposed to the escalation. But it's the thing, the question is the escalation. Forget the escalation, man. They're already there anyway.
Yep.
We're talking about the PNAC guys carrying out their plan of attacking Iran, and Cheney's got the authorization, or given the authorization, or whoever's given the authorization to use tactical nukes, and they're all sitting over there in those submarines and what have you. We've got half our military over there in that Gulf.
Well, we sure do, and you know, they've got every intention of provoking something. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. As far as influencing the local newsprint, I don't know about where you live. Where I live, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in Naples, Florida. It's not going to happen in Fort Myers, Florida. Probably in Miami, you could.
You couldn't actually lobby a reporter to say, "Hey, are you going to even ask this representative?"
Not a chance.
Can you believe this?
Well, sure I can. I've lived here long enough. I lived here 10 years. I understand what makes this world go around where I live, and it's right wing heaven. I'm telling you. Yeah, you will not. If you could read the letters to the editor every day, and I mean some days all of them, hateful right wing letters.
The whole Islamo fascist.
Oh yeah, every one of the talking points, they got them down, and they're working them over really good in this. You know, it's a Gannett newspaper here.
There you go. They bought up the whole damn.
They sure have, and that's the trouble. I don't believe in this mass ownership of the media, but it's done, and it's not going to be undone.
We've got to find a way to put these representatives and senators on the spot about Iran before the fact, you know.
Do you really think that they would actually have to go in the House and the Senate and pass a law forbidding, and then it would come to a constitutional crisis? And I think we've already heard the answer from the White House. We heard Cheney say, didn't matter what people said, they're going to do what they were, you know, we're going to do what we planned on doing. And so I don't know, he wasn't speaking specifically on the Iran issue there, but they don't give a damn. They really don't. And they don't have to.
No. That all the more reason why this Congress has to impeach these.
Well, it may get to that, and I still think it will.
I think they're going to launch before you even get close to that. This Cheney and the whole PNAC crowd, they're
Oh, they're nuts. I mean, they'll go ahead and do that, and you know what will happen. The people will coalesce behind them once again, and it won't be as any 90% like it was the last time, but it'll get up to 50, 55, even 60%. Well, we're going to war. We better back the president and a bunch of fools.
You think it'll come up that?
Sure.
I think we have a chance to stop it, you know, because, and the reason why I say that, Guy, is because it hasn't happened yet. You know?
Well, I don't think you know, I hate to be believe me, you don't know how sad it makes me to say this.
The American people are just so, they'll let World War III start, you know, instead of get off their ass and try to do something about it.
Right, you got one thing there. And the other thing is, will they even give a damn what we say and just go ahead and do what they want anyway?
Well, I wonder if any of the other listeners have any ideas about how we can at least try to stop these guys. You know, instead of saying like, no matter what we do, they're going to do it anyway. You know, put that option to the side, you know, and let's see what comes up, putting our heads together, you know, brainstorming on this.
Well, I hope you're right.
You know, if anyone out there in radio land has some ideas, let's throw them out, you know. Well, I shouldn't dictate what your show is about, but
you go ahead. I'll go get me some potato chips and a Coke.
Yeah. Well,
barbecue chips, not regular chips.
Well, okay, Guy, I'm going to keep trying to do what I can. I want to be able to, you know, years from now, if I'm still alive, and the kids and the grandkids say, you know, did you try to stop it? I want to be able to say, yes, I tried, you know.
Yes, I agree. Hey, Bill, good talking to you.
Hey, it's Phil.
Phil, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
You're not paying attention here.
Thanks, Guy.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's go over here to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, Dave, Northern Cal.
Hi, Dave.
You do have some excellent listeners, and I do agree with everything Phil had to share with you there. His situation, I guess, is rather hopeless, as is yours. You both have a congressman totally in the pocket of the con.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it.
And that is so sad. You know, mine isn't quite there. He calls himself a Democrat, and he knows he has a very progressive district here. We are. We have in some of our towns more Greens than there are Republicans. So I don't know how I analyze it. I try to understand. Well, how do so many people stay so stupid? How can they do it? And you've got them all around you. You've said that. I think one thing is that we all, at a real level, want to believe we're a part of a wonderful country that does good stuff, that we are part of a country that spreads good throughout the world. We want to believe that, and it's hard to make the leap that we are now a government headed by hardcore criminals out to rape the planet. So,
Yeah, people just don't want to believe that, do they?
No. They want so much not to believe it that they turn on Rush Limbaugh, who tells them the lies they want to hear, or they turn on Fox News that tells them the lies they want to hear. What is motivating those guys now? That's something else. I think they should be taken off to prison because they know they are taking news and twisting and spinning it all around to make it come out as something else. They are the closers on some rinky-dink used car lot that's trying to make, you know, make you buy a real bad product and overpay for it. That's what they're there to do. And,
I know exactly what you're saying. It's well, a lot of people aren't going to do anything until they, you know, knock on their door. I mean, that's just sad but true, I'm afraid.
Well, one thing I have found is that if you're with any kind of an organization that cares, and I'm with the Veterans for Peace, and I'm with the World Can't Wait, and I'm with the Pink Coalition, everything that I can be a part of that's trying to end this war, you can, in that capacity, call Congress members all over the place. If you happen to have two of the worst, and you two do, you and Phil, that you have one, I imagine going to Finney's office and asking them to do the right thing on anything. And I guess you've got the same with yours there.
Yeah, sure do. Sure do.
Connie Mack is just totally owned by the cons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Connie Mack is a career politician at his young age. He's going to work in politics for the rest of his life. His daddy did. That's how it is. They're rich and famous and wealthy and influential. And I don't for the life of me understand how anybody could put somebody like that in office and vote with them. I don't get it. I really don't. And yet Connie Mack has been criticized profusely in our right-wing red newspaper here, and still they turn out in great numbers for him. I mean, go figure. He doesn't even come here. He doesn't have to come here. He lives over on the other side of the state. Don't get me started.
My guess, Guy, and you know it, is that Diebold turns out in great numbers for him. You say that you talk to a lot of people enough that they reflect the same kind of ignorance that is being taught to them on the Limbaugh show and all, but I can't believe that there are really that many people.
I can, Dave. I can. You don't want to be any place around here. I mean, I do, but you don't want to be the average person walk around here and display a Democratic bumper sticker on your car or mention that you're a Democrat. You just don't want to do that here. It's that bad.
Every week I'm involved in demonstrations. Every week 20 some of us show up at our local congressman's field office. We stand out in front of our courthouse with banners, "Bring the Troops Home, Veterans for Peace," and I'm a part of that every week. And I would say that here we've got, I would say 99 people will go by waving, hollering, "We love you," honking their horn, to the one absolute dingbat idiot that'll go by with some obscenity and a finger.
Sure.
And that's the mentality that is backing this administration.
Well, here you'd have 99 give you the finger and one say you did all right. We have a little group that does that down in Naples every Friday night. But, you know, it's a group of four, five, six people, and they're abused. I mean, no question about it.
That's too bad.
Yeah,
it is. I wanted to hope that we had evolved a little further.
No, we haven't.
As a certainty on your prior conversation, it was never, never the intent of this administration to benefit the Iraqi people or the American people. It is their purpose to benefit themselves by taking everything that they can possibly take above and below the ground in the United States and in Iraq.
Absolutely.
Shift that whole treasury into their pockets. They want to do that, and they don't care how many people they hurt in the process. So to think of notions like, why couldn't we just have given them each $20,000?
Well, we said that I hope you understand, we said that tongue firmly in cheek. Yeah.
That is, if it was their intent to do any good, they could have done that. But clearly it never was.
Hey, got to move on, Dave.
Thank you so much, Guy.
I promised I would speak about the AEI, the American Enterprise Institute. We talk about all these right-wing groups on this program, and the AEI is a group. You know, there's so many of these right-wing think tanks that people don't understand what they are, what they do, and all that. They're influence peddlers. That's what they are. That's all they are. They get millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in many cases poured into them, and they peddle influence. That's what they do. And, geez, we've got... have the animals making it. I'm not going to bring them in. I'm not going to bring those puppies into studio anymore if they can keep this up. Anyway, on a serious note, back on a serious note, talking about the American Enterprise Institute, they're not a lobbying group. That term was misused in the Guardian's report recently, the London Guardian report on AEI. They're sponsoring scientists, paying them $10,000 to debate the UN Global Warming Report. And it's a think tank. And it's interesting to see who puts the money up for these think tanks, like the AEI. You know, their purpose is to provide ammunition for conservative policymakers to delay or destroy any government regulation that might run counter to what they want to do. They want business to be able to run amok with no restrictions on them whatsoever, with no environmental restrictions, no restrictions. They want business to be like it was back in the 20s. Henry Ford, do what the hell you want. Turn Detroit black if you want to. The steel companies in Gary, Indiana, and Pittsburgh, and the steel belt, turn the whole damn town black if you want to. That's what they want to go back to. They're all for that. And you take a look at who puts these, you know, they go against every one of the environmental concerns, paying scientists $10,000 to put out reports contrary to what the environmentalists say. Come on. Exxon's a big contributor to the American Enterprise Institute. We've got the Scaife Family Foundations. You know, they like to talk about George Soros on the left. Well, the Scaife Family Foundation make him look like a piker, the money that they put on to these think tanks. Richard Mellon Scaife. And how did he make his money? He inherited the Mellon fortune from his mommy. And that fortune was largely based on Gulf Oil and Alcoa. Exxon. Big contributor to AEI. And Scaife. And the Earhart Foundation. Who are they? It's a group founded by Henry Earhart. White Star Oil Company. More oil money. The Bradley Foundation. Another of the major conservative funders in the country. That foundation made its money from the Allen Bradley Company fortune after it was sold to Rockwell. The Bradley Foundation is the country's largest and most influential right-wing organization, along with the John M. Olin Foundation. It's oil money and more oil money. The Castle Rock Foundation, huge contributor to AEI. Who's the Castle Rock Foundation? Founded by the Adolph Coors fortune. It provides generous funding to groups such as AEI and the Heritage Foundation. You know, the foundation was started in an effort to take some of the public relations flack away from the Coors family itself for supporting controversial conservative causes. It's a dirty, slimy business, AEI. And all these groups, like the Heritage Foundation. And you see ads on TV once in a while, and you wonder, you know, you'll be watching CNN, and you'll see an ad for Martin Marietta. Well, hell, you're not going to go out and buy anything from Martin Marietta, and neither is anybody you know. Why is Martin Marietta advertising on there? Influence. They want influence with CNN. They'll spend millions of dollars to advertise on a CNN or any network. And then when they want something publicized the way they want it publicized, well, a company like CNN is pretty apt to go along with them, don't you think? That's how it works. That's exactly how it works. Who did I see the other night? Boeing. Boeing advertising on TV. What the hell for? You're not going to go out and buy a Boeing airplane. Neither am I. Well, maybe some of you are. I don't know. But I don't think any of my listeners... well, maybe. I don't want to speak for you. I know I can't afford a Boeing airplane. But why the hell would they advertise? Influence. Simple. You see it all the time. Many times you see ads for huge companies on TV, and you wonder, well, gee, that doesn't affect me at all. No, they're just buying influence. That's all. And AEI is one of the most guilty groups. You wouldn't believe some of the things they've come up with. I should get a list together of everything. AEI's got a wonderful relationship with ExxonMobil and this global warming campaign. And AEI's, you know, they're paying $10,000 for anybody that'll write a report against it. It doesn't have to be true. I thought about it myself. Oh, hell, I'll just write a paper and get it sent. Nah, I don't want to do that. It'd be a big lie. But it's a completely biased research institute. Yeah, that's what they're there for, the influence. And they're to influence the American public, and they do what they can. People, it puzzles me all the time when I see the right-wingers, a Limbaugh or somebody, that go after George Soros. And my God, Richard Mellencamp, you wonder how these right-wingers sell these books. You wonder how Ann Coulter hits number one right away. Why? Because the Scaife Foundation buys 50,000 copies and gives them away right from the get-go. They do that all the time. Most of these right-wing authors that you see have a book high up on the bestseller list. The Scaife Foundation buys 50,000 copies of them right out of the gate and gives them away. Odd, don't you think? But again, it's a way of keeping their right-wing propaganda first and foremost in people's mind. And that's what it's all about, people. It's about propaganda. These people have learned their lessons well over the year. Don't think they haven't studied people like Leni Riefenstahl and people like that from a certain place in Europe 75 years ago. Don't think they haven't studied it, because they have. They know how to influence people. That's what it's all about for them. It's a shame, but it's true. They'll influence you any way they can. Legal, illegal, fair or not fair, fact or fiction, their idea is to influence people so that they can have their way, so that they can run their businesses without any restrictions, without any government oversight whatsoever, so that they can run roughshod over the people, so that they can send the jobs overseas, so that they can do all the things that they've been doing during these Republican administrations as of late. Now, they want it their way. And they're getting it their way. Oh, are they getting it their way. Sad thing is, I don't see an end to it. I see a lot of Democrats taking corporate money as well. I don't know. Hey, we're going to be back in, just a shade over 5 minutes with another hour of the Guy James Show. Sure hope you'll participate. So, just hang in there. We'll be back here in the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, during a morning news conference, President Bush covered issues ranging from the rebuilding and securing of Baghdad to the nuclear ambitions of North Korea and Iran. During the press conference, the president emphasized his responsibility to protecting the troops. He was also questioned by reporters about the quality of the intelligence that claims Iran is aiding insurgents by supplying weaponry. The president admitted he's not sure if decisions were being made by Tehran, but knows for a fact that an Iranian government entity known as the Quds Force is present in Iraq. The U.S. military has confirmed today the helicopter that went down last week north of Baghdad was shot down by hostile fire. Authorities earlier thought the Chinook had mechanical failure. All seven on board died. This was the fifth helicopter to be shot down in the last 3 weeks. More bad weather is moving across the storm-battered northeast. A blizzard warning has been issued for parts of New England. Nearly 300,000 homes and businesses are without electricity, and at least 12 deaths are blamed on the storm system. In Dubai, a Saudi wing of Al-Qaeda has called for attacks around the world on all U.S. oil resources. A Middle Eastern e-magazine reported the threat, which was posted on a website used by Islamist militants. For the first time, a U.S. citizen has been charged with terrorism for assisting Islamic militants in Somalia. The 28-year-old Texas man is being held in a Houston jail. In Iran, 11 members of the country's elite Revolutionary Guard traveling by a bus were killed by a car bomb in a sensitive border province. A Sunni militant group, which has been blamed for previous attacks, is claiming responsibility for the ambush. In Paris, French authorities have arrested 11 people suspected of being involved in terrorist activities. The arrests are the result of a lengthy investigation. In the U.S. Senate, Democrats have introduced legislation providing Guantanamo Bay prisoners with the right of habeas corpus and access to U.S. courts. The bill also narrowly defines the term enemy combatant. Over the last 5 years, 550 men have been held at the prison camp. In Sacramento, lawmakers voted to move the state's presidential primary to February. The measure is aimed at increasing California's political influence. However, four other large states, Illinois, Texas, Florida, and New Jersey, are considering doing the same, which could dilute the effect of California's move. North and South Korea agreed today to resume peace talks. Negotiations broke off after the North conducted missile tests in July. Technically, the two countries still remain at war. More to come.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
British academics say Anthony and Cleopatra were not really that beautiful. A study of a 2,000-year-old coin that depicts the two lovers shows unflattering attributes such as a shallow forehead, pointed chin, and bulging eyes. The coin will go on display today at Newcastle University. Google's free email service is now open to all. Until now, the 3-year-old service was by invitation only. In Congress, legislation banning genetic testing by insurance companies and employers is expected to win committee approval today. The measure prohibits insurers from denying coverage or raising premiums because a customer has a genetic predisposition to a disease. The world's two largest mining companies are in a bidding war to acquire U.S. aluminum producer Alcoa. Billiton and Rio Tinto are both offering $40 billion for the American company. Chrysler says it will eliminate 10,000 jobs, close down two assembly plants, and shutter several smaller factories. The carmaker will reveal more details of the restructuring plans later on today. On Valentine's Day, the UK British pharmacy chain Boots will begin selling Viagra without a prescription. Men between 35 and 65 will have to provide pharmacists with their healthy history before receiving the pills. Light sweet crude is trading at $58.43 a barrel in New York Mercantile Exchange. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow Jones is up 80. The NASDAQ is up 30. The S&P 500 up 11. There's more news at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And we want to welcome all of our folks over at the Head On Radio Network chat room. And, of course, all of our new listeners from the iTunes site. Man, that's quite a deal over at iTunes. I have to admit, I never was at the iTunes site until they posted Head On Radio Network on there. Had to go over and register and see what it was about and all that. Very, very interesting. And we're glad to have all of you folks along. And we do hope you'll give us a call, 866-546-5254. I want to get at one of these big lies that the Republican like to tell. And I'll get at it in just a minute right after. Let's go to the phones, 866-546-5254. Let's see who's over here on line three. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Timber in Durham, North Carolina. How you doing?
Howdy.
Got a kind of a quick, direct question for you since you were talking about the Iran thing. And I'm on board. I'm on your side on that. But my question is this. If Democrats still think that the Carter Doctrine is a legitimate political philosophy for American foreign policy, and an argument could be made that what we're doing in the Middle East right now, in Iraq and Iran, is just the realization of the Carter Doctrine, then aren't the Democrats kind of contradicting themselves, or are we kind of coming face to face with a reality that we didn't expect?
How would it
to
be
when the policy was laid out?
How would it be contradictory?
Because we're claiming that to invade these countries and to seize the resources isn't justified or legitimate, but that's exactly what the Carter Doctrine
did. I ever say I ever agreed with that?
I'm not saying you did, but I'm saying it seems like the establishment Democrat position, and the Young Turks have told me the same thing, that the Carter Doctrine itself wasn't wrong, but how it's being demonstrated by the Bush administration is wrong, and I don't understand that disconnect there.
I don't understand that either. I'm afraid I don't. No doctrine ever calling for the invasion and occupation of a country that didn't attack us would be right in my mind. I don't care if George Washington came up with it; it wouldn't be okay in my mind. I don't think I've not ever studied the Carter Doctrine in depth.
It essentially says that we have the right as a nation to maintain access to the resources of the Middle East, even if it requires military force. And I can't imagine us.
I'd have to read that.
China has the right to our coal.
I'd have to read that, because I wouldn't agree with that in any way, shape, or form. I'll make it a point to do that.
And I guess my question about Iran too is why there seems to be so much a Democrat support, not necessarily for an invasion of Iran, but that we have a legitimate claim to demand that Iran be helpless against an invasion by the United States. And if they refuse to even pretend to not want to defend themselves, then we'll preemptively invade them anyway. I guess the argument could be made that this is just real politics and this is the way the world operates, but I'm trying not to be that cynical.
Well, that is the way the world the way it works, and not for me. I don't think it's right. I'm not one of these ones. I just saw. I mentioned to my wife. I saw something on TV. Oh, last night during one of the news, hard news programs, it said something about, you know, our military and this and hey, fine. I mean, I know. We're watching that that show on the History Channel about Norman Schwarzkopf and when we invaded in Gulf One. And they were standing there bragging, well, you know, we went in there and we kicked their ass and, boy, we're superior and all. Well, of course we're superior when we spend more money on our military than all the rest of the world combined. I'm not one of those exceptionalist people. I don't believe that we are exceptional. I don't believe that we have the right to run over another country for any reason. I just don't. And I know everybody's fond of this braggadocio. Yeah, I'll fight for the U.S. right or wrong. By God, it's my country. You know, no, I don't go along with that. And if I'm un-American for saying that, which I don't think I am, well, too bad.
Well, the idealism behind the idea of American exceptionalism is that we are intervening in all these other countries to defend them from an outside threat or to advance democracy and freedom, but you see so often that, I mean, from the United Fruit Company on up to Iraq, as far as I'm concerned, it hasn't been to protect democracy. It has been more about an economic interest, usually a private economic interest, and it's unfortunate because if American exceptionalism was what it claims to be, I would probably not be as opposed to intervening in countries as I am, but because I don't see that that is the motivation behind it.
Motivation's the money. It's always the money. It's got nothing to do with being the best and the brightest and the most moral and ethical and all that. It's got nothing to do with that. It's about the money, and more money. That's all it's about. It's a shame it's turned into that. And it's a shame that, you know, the American government's taking advantage of our good feelings, our good, you know, the nationalism here in this country by the people. They've taken advantage of that, and they certainly took advantage of it going to war with Iraq. They knew everybody would jump on the bandwagon and fly the flag and do a yahoo and all that for a while until they finally figured out that they'd been had, and they have figured, the public has figured out they've been had, and now it's too late.
All right, I got one more question for you, Guy, and I'll just listen off on the air. And that's, do you think we are engaged legitimately in a war on terror, or do you think that's pretty much just a manufactured conflict to justify more military spending and operations?
Sure, it's bunk.
Thanks. I'll listen on the air.
Okay. Yeah, the war on terror, probably the biggest fabrication that there ever was. Is there terrorism in this world? Of course there is. Will we get hit by it again? Yes, we will. So will other countries. There will always be terrorism. There's been terrorism since the beginning of time, and it will continue. It is more pervasive now because this world has become a lot smaller now. It's a lot easier for some of these countries, some that we considered nations that could never harm us. Now anybody can harm us from any place in the country. They can come and cause some terror in this country. The world has shrunk. But is it legitimate the way the Bush people want to fight it? No. Hell no. Fighting terrorism is not a business you go at with an army and a big navy and all that. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like you know, swatting a fly with a baseball bat. And that's just what we've done in Iraq. We've made fools of ourselves. We've made fools of the United States of America. That's the way other countries look at us now. They look at the people of the United States like that now, by the way. They used to just think our government was stupid. Now they think we are as well. Fighting terrorism the way that Bush says he wants to fight terrorism, that's ridiculous. I think a kid in kindergarten would know that, you know, a police action is what you need. You need an undercover, a strike force. You know, your SEALs. You just don't go after them with a 150,000 man army or whatever. It's absurd. Look at the money we've spent in Iraq. What have we accomplished? Nothing. Nothing. You want to put it on the scales? You say, oh, yes, we've built some schools. Yeah, and we built a hospital or two, and we built this. But look at the other side of the scales. Oh, my God. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
Well, I couldn't resist responding to what the last caller just said. I sit here and someone says something, and I just can't help but grab the phone.
Glad you did. That's what it's about.
Well, you know, he kept talking about the Carter Doctrine, the Carter Doctrine, the Carter Doctrine, okay? And I know he probably means well, but, you know, I really would be curious what example he could give to me of when, during the President Carter's presidency, or any time thereafter, he advocated attacking a country who never attacked us, you know, for trumped-up reasons. And, you know, basically, President Carter was very much for diplomacy. I mean, he basically brokered the peace between Israel and Egypt. And if you look at other things he did, he gave back the Panama Canal because he said, look, this is not ours. This was taken from the Panamanian people, and we have to give it back to them, even though that was an important resource used by the United States. So that seems to really contradict what the gentleman has been saying.
Well, maybe they thought he was going to do that, you know. that might be the way some of the right wingers think. Well, that Carter, he was gonna do that.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, and I liked your example where you said a second ago, you know, they're bringing up, you know, painting the schools and this and that. You know, just imagine for a minute, let's say Minneapolis, Minnesota. Okay, now let's say that there were terrorists there, and one day 70 people get blown up in a market. The next day, you know, say 35. The next day they find 20 people on a roadside dead that had been tortured. I don't think people there would be happy with, well, yes, this is all happening, but we're painting a few schools here in Minneapolis, and you know, we're training a new police force. I just don't think that would cut it here.
I don't think it cut it anywhere. It's certainly not cutting it in Baghdad. I heard some sergeant, one of the Republicans talking in front of the House today had that on here in the studio, and he was saying, I had a sergeant come to my office today, and he told me, we've got to finish this job over there. We built schools. You know, they always bring that up. We built schools. Man, I'll tell you, how many of those schools are open and functioning right now? The only thing is the troubles. Why, it's only in Anbar province in Baghdad. The rest of the country's fine. And they don't like to mention that a third of the population's in Baghdad, for God's sake.
Well, and not just that. You know, they talk about the democracy. Right now, from what I read in Baghdad, like, barbers won't work because if they cut someone's beard, they will be killed. And it's a lot worse for women than it ever was under Saddam. You know, under Saddam, you know, yes, he was a terrible man, but women could go to school and were freely educated, and it was a secular state. Now it's becoming more and more of a hostile Islamic republic, so we don't have democracy there either. You know, and this claim, you know, well, we have to, you know, work and protect democracy in the world. Well, I would put Iraq, way down the list there. I mean, if you're going to go, what about China, where they're having a shortage of women now because generations of girls were killed. You know, we can go over to Pakistan, our dear friends, where it's a dictatorship, or we can go over to Saudi Arabia, where they will kill women for driving, or to Myanmar, one of the worst dictatorships on earth. And you know, we seem not to be interested in those places in promoting democracy.
And democracy in Iraq, come on. I mean, now this new general they've got there, they're going to clean everybody out of houses they don't belong in. They're going to kick down doors. They're going to monitor their telephone calls. They're going to open their mail. Does that sound familiar? They're going to break into homes and cars and open mail and eavesdrop on phone calls. That's their idea of democracy. Of course, that's Bush's idea of democracy as well.
But I just don't see what the logical end of this whole thing is. Do they somehow think that tomorrow the terrorists there are going to say, oh, okay, well, we see that you've built a couple more schools, so we're going to stop now. I mean, how do they see an end coming about? I mean, the Iraqi police force is years away from being able to stand up by itself. Anyone who joins the police force is a target. I see no end in sight.
No, you're all wrong. That Iraqi police force is going to be ready to go any day now. How long have you been saying that?
Yeah, for 5 years.
3 years? Of course, I've just dug through some old news articles the other day. They had 180,000 of them trained 3 years ago.
Oh.
To hear them tell it. I mean, they disappeared, but, you know.
175,000 of them are dead, but...
Yeah. I mean, it's just... Give us six more months, you know. We'll show you. Give us six more months, and we'll show you. That's...
Oh, jeez.
Got to give them time. Let this work.
Yeah. Before I go, I just wanted to tell you about one more little thing that's a little unrelated here. Our American Greetings evidently has these greeting cards on their website where they're truly bashing Democrats. They're showing Nancy Pelosi in a bondage outfit and Harry Reid under the high heel. But curiously enough, there are no Republican cards like that, you know. And if you go check, you find out American Greetings has contributed 87% to Republicans. So it's kind of just interesting. So people going out to buy Valentine's Day cards, they might want to reconsider buying an American Greetings card.
Well, that, and everybody knows the Republicans wouldn't be, you know, they would never be involved in that kind of stuff anyway.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's all, yeah. It's strictly those lefties.
They have to infiltrate even a holiday like today. So anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, good to hear from you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. I'm going to take a couple of minutes here, and then I want to talk about liberal radio in a minute, if I get a chance to. But first, I want to talk to you about, do you ever get any emails? Do you ever send any emails? And you know what I'm talking about like these ones we get from the right ringers saying this and this and this and this, and by God, pass this on, because you know what I'm talking about. Those faux patriotic emails we get all the time from people. And always tell the big lie. For example, I got one recently about Robert Byrd making, $275,000 a year for the rest of his life, which, my God, he's 93 years old. They invent these things, and then they just pass them around, and then their media people get a hold of them, and they pass them around some more. Frank Gaffney Jr., president of the far-right Center for Security Policy and a columnist for the conservative Washington Times, you know who I'm talking about, many of you do, wrote a column this week in the Washington Times, big newspaper, owned by the Moonies in Washington, D.C., yes, that moon, blasting congressional lawmakers who support a non-binding resolution on Bush's escalation policy. Gaffney's piece led with this quote, okay? And I know many of you have heard this, but I want to examine it more closely. And let me quote, "Congressmen who willfully take actions during wartime that damage morale and undermine the military are saboteurs and should be arrested, exiled, or hanged. President Abraham Lincoln," end quote. Well, it was actually end quote after hanged. War supporters pounced. One far-right blogger said, in reference to congressional Democrats, "Lincoln's prescription for this type of conduct should not be forgotten." Another conservative, who frequently equates dissent with treason, said, "Lincoln's quote should be on every conservative website as a reminder to America why the Democrats are not to be trusted with our national security." Now, my first thought was that the use of Lincoln quotes sounded vaguely threatening. And anyway, Gaffney goes on to explain. I want to find out where I got my note on here. But they're passing that around. And Frank Gaffney, they put it in the Washington Times in a and I've gotten many emails with that thing on over the years about Lincoln. They got to be hanged. Even a recent example of this was Diana Eyre, the Republican candidate who ran against Jack Murtha. She said at a news conference on May the 24th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., that Murtha's comments and actions are not that of a patriot, but serve to aid and comfort our enemy. And if those words weren't strong enough, she added, "Our 16th president once said, and I quote, 'Congressmen who willfully take action during wartime that damage morale and undermine the military are saboteurs and should be arrested, exiled, or hanged.'" They've used this over and over and over again. Just one problem. Abraham Lincoln never said it. Never said it. And if any of you can show me a legitimate historical reference where Abraham Lincoln said that, I'll give you $100, okay? That exact quote. Never said it. And they've used that to blame the Democrats of treason. It appeared in Insight magazine under the headline, "Democrats usher in an age of treason." That's what President Abraham Lincoln said during the war between the states. There is no evidence of Lincoln ever advocating hanging members of Congress at all. The complete works of Abraham Lincoln have been searched, and the phrase exiled or hanged simply doesn't appear there, let alone the entire quote. It's a fallacy. But the right-wingers have been using this over and over and over again. Not only did Lincoln not say that, it's hard to believe that's anything Lincoln even might have said. Lincoln was criticized often, but never said anything like that about anybody that disagreed with him. Never. And you can check the entire works of Abraham Lincoln, and you will not find that anyplace. But next time you see that, next time you hear about that, well, there you go. I mean, it's just another one of those deals. Complete fabrication by the right wing. Utterly and completely false. But that doesn't stop them. They don't care. Hey, we're going to pause for another Valentine's Day song. Oh, yes, we are. And we'll be back in just a moment. And I Love Her by the Beatles. Yes, indeed. That's a very rare, seldom heard version of that, thanks to Billy Shears. You just don't hear that very often. It's they had a much more lively version of it later on. I like that one personally. Hey, welcome back to the Guy James Show. You can give us a call if you like. I should keep my mouth shut about what I'm about to talk about, but I can't. I just can't. And hope you'll understand. I was going to say forgive me. Forgive me if I do offend you, but I will offend some of you by saying what I'm going to say. But I'll say right up front, I'm not sorry for it. And I'll never be sorry for it. If had an article sent to me from Talking Radio, and as you all know, I was in Washington, D.C. recently for a meeting with Democratic broadcasters, liberal broadcasters. By the way, I was the only one there that called myself a liberal broadcaster. The rest of them were all progressive. I hate that. That's just me. I won't run. You know, some of you new folks, some of you new iTunes folks, and some people new to the show today, I will not run from the label liberal. I have been a liberal all my life. Progressive, fine. If that works in there, okay. I'm liberal first, progressive second. That's the way it'll always be. It's the way it always has been. I refuse to allow the right-wingers to make liberal a dirty word. And I'll proudly wear that label the rest of my life. But I was in Washington, D.C. recently talking with other liberal broadcasters, progressive, they all called themselves except for me. And the whole crew was there. John Elliott, Arnie Arneson. Oh, who else? Trying to think. Randy Rhodes was there. Ed Schultz was there. And a few others. I'm trying. Tom Hartman was there, of course. And it's interesting to get together with these people and hear how they feel about liberal progressive radio. Because a couple of them in that room, Randy Rhodes, and most especially Mr. Ed Schultz, doing all right for himself. And I've mentioned before on this program how Ed Schultz, the story that he's told about how he happened to be come to be a liberal progressive broadcaster now. He was as hard right as you can get. And he had this, I don't know what you want to call it, a metamorphosis. He had something happen to him. And you know what I think it was. But I don't particularly like his style. And I'm not talking about the radio style. You can do what you want on the radio. That's why we have different styles and different ways of doing things. But I want to tell you a little bit about what this article from Talking Radio said. It said, if you caught the second hour of Ed Schultz's radio show yesterday, you got to hear from Chris Dodd, blah, 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 blah. And in the first hour, you got to experience an outrageous display of liberals eating their own. As Big Eddie lashed out against Air America Radio, several of the hosts, one ex-host, Schultz's own syndication company, and even the new expected owners of the Liberal Talk Network. What prompted Schultz's outburst was a statement made by an AAR host, Sam Sater, who apparently urged his listeners to call XM Satellite Radio to support the placement of Tom Hartman in the coveted morning slot formerly held by now ex-AAR host Al Franken. You all know today is Al Franken's last day on Air America. But Schultz goes off on one of his rants about everybody but him. He's a puffed-up gas bag, and that's the kindest thing I can say about Ed Schultz. He got to where he is, and I won't give you the whole story, but he certainly got to where he is through political connections. And he sucked up to some pretty good political connections, and that's why he's where he's at today. And so he uses his position that he has today as the most listened to liberal radio host and talked about AAR, and that's fine. They can talk about AAR all they want to. But he went on to say that Air America sucked He said it 10 times. He said, you can eat me 3 times. In case you're thinking you're making this up, you can find it on Schultz's website. And he said, I wish AAR would just go away and shut up. I'll bet he does. It's more markets for Ed Schultz, and that's all he's thinking about here. He said they never sold a commercial. They pimped the radio industry. Well, none of this is for Ed to say. Yes, I don't think Air America had a good business plan. And he said, I'm beyond the point of pussyfooting around all this stuff, he continued. Nobody buys their crap. They can't even run a business. All they can do is hate people, even me. Well, Ed, I might say that a lot of some people hate you. I think you've earned it. And what he's upset about is he's pissed. He's pissed at AAR. And I want to find the part in here. He says, I'm up against Rush and Hannity and Dr. Laura and Imus. I'm proud to be in their league. Well, dream on, Eddie. I wanted to find... Oh, here's the part of this that mostly offended me. He hates Randy Rhoad, as you know. But a caller who sympathized with Schultz's dissatisfaction with AAR ran into trouble when she also expressed kind feelings toward Mike Malloy, who was dumped by AAR 6 months ago. And so he says, Mike Malloy has taken so many shots at me, he's not left enough. He's a Republican, is what Mike always tells him about Big Eddie. And Mike is dead on with that. He says, tell Malloy he can eat me too, Schultz said as he hung up on the caller. If Malloy was worth a damn, he'd still be on the air somewhere. Well, actually, Mike Malloy is on the air now. He's carried on 8 radio stations on Nova M. The fact is about this, that Big Eddie Schultz is just pissed because he doesn't have it all to himself. And the part that upsets many of the rest of us who are not in Ed Schultz's shoes is he's not a liberal progressive broadcaster. Not a genuine one. And that's what I mean. And I just found it offensive that Ed Schultz would go on and on and on and talk about that in the way that he did. I was at the meeting recently. He's pissed because he's losing some markets. He's pissed that a lot of his markets are, as the congressman told him, your market here in Washington, D.C. so poor we can't hear it from 3 blocks down the street. And those are a lot of the ones that he counts amongst his 102 stations or however many it is that he's on. Many, many of them are the daylight stations. And there are very many of them are very, very low power stations as well. And we need all those we can get for the progressive movement. All I'm saying is that Ed Schultz's show is not a progressive movement. So, Ed, you can condemn everybody else in the business that you want to, rant and rave against the rest of us, against the Mike Malloys and the Randy Rhoads and even the Al Frankens and everybody involved. But we know who you are. We know what you are. And you're not the real McCoy, Ed Schultz. And you can like it if you want to. You can stuff it if you want to. I really don't care. But I know what the story is. I know how he got where he is. I was there. I read the stories about how he got the original job with Democracy Radio, the original push, and it's a fallacy. I was there. In the room. And what he said happened never happened. Never happened. But he can live in that dream world all he wants to, and I just thought you ought to know the truth. You want to know why he gets a good guest on his show? Because that's where the money came from. It's exactly where it came from. And there's several of us out here that know the exact truth of exactly what happened with that whole deal of him getting financed and put on the Democracy Radio with Tom Athens and that whole business. And there's people going to be pissed at me for letting this out in the open air. But I was there. And so were several other people I could name that may not want to be named, so I won't name them. But I know the truth of that situation. And Schultz doesn't tell the truth about that situation. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Jim Yancey down in the Goshen, Mississippi.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, sorry to ask me to call you. We had a Sean Ryan, his group out of Phoenix, Arizona, just brought in two shipments for the Mississippi Mission down here on the coast.
Oh, good, good. You got them in.
For Hurricane Katrina, just came in, and we're unloading up at the warehouse now.
Good. Everything arrived the way you thought it would and all?
Yeah, it arrived good. I tell you, we had a 15-item list, and they came up with just an amazing amount of items they gave down here, and it just keeps the recovery process going. I know in Florida, y'all are the experts over there because y'all have more hurricanes than we do, but we're still trying to dig out of this mess. Over
well,
there.
All of them didn't add up to half of what yours was, so we had a lot more help, I'm afraid, too. There's no doubt about it. We had more help than you did. With Jeb Bush being the governor, why, that
helped.
It certainly did. It certainly did. I would have thought your governor could have gotten more done than he did, but I don't know. But how long is it going to take you to get everything passed out and distributed and all?
Well, we have our they brought enough down here probably to fit out in homes probably 30 to 40 families, and we're going to have the distribution the first next week, and it'll go out then. We've already got everything designated for families down here in Jackson County, Mississippi.
So oh, very good.
It'll go quick.
You pretty much had everything, as it were, ordered. People got their want list turned into you already.
Yes. They had their want and need list, so they brought it down, and we just we're inventoried it now as it comes in, and we'll check it back out the first of the week. So
you've got a big warehouse to store everything in?
Yes, sir. Yes, from the county, and it's going to go well. So they've given us a warehouse to store stuff in, and that's what we've been doing.
Very good, very good. Well, there's going to be a lot of people happy that those trucks arrived. What were there? Three trucks?
Well, actually, originally it was three trucks, and then they were able to put them. They said, Sean Ryan told me, said, we just got some professional packers, and they put it into two trucks. And they were loaded full to the kill, and they got in here late last night. And they went over to the school this morning and dropped some Valentines off for some kids that filled out some Valentines over in Phoenix for some kids down here that live still living in FEMA trailers. So.
Aw, gosh, that's nice.
Okay, it wasn't a dry in a room when they finished.
I'll bet so.
So now they're over here unloading, and then we're going to take them around a little bit tomorrow and show them what's still left to be done down here.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be done, and it's going to be years, isn't it?
Well, I tell you, we we're trying to get as much of the stuff done in the next 12 months because our professionals tell us it's going to be years before we get this thing built back, but we still got a lot of people in FEMA trailers, and we don't have years. We're on a short lease up here or down here, so we need to get people back in their homes.
Has everybody got a FEMA trailer that needs one? Is at least that part of it?
No, they're still. Somebody was telling me yesterday. Yeah, they're still. Every now and then, they're still delivering them down here. And we found a few people in tents last week down here in the coast. So, and there's still folks in need, unfortunately.
And what kind of, Jim, what kind of weather are you having there right now, normally this time of year?
Well, normally it's a little warmer than it is, but like this morning is in the 20s and 30s.
Ooh.
And that's pretty chilly for us folks on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. I lived up in Washington State when I was in the military years ago. I'm kind of used to cold weather, but I tell you, this cold kind of cuts through you. So we've had a cold spell, and we're ready for spring to get here.
Well, it won't be too long, a couple of months yet, or 6 weeks maybe, I don't know. It comes earlier there than it does up north, so.
Yes.
Well, good luck in getting everything distributed, and we're going to have you on the program some of these days soon. I've got your number here and all, and we'd like to do maybe a whole half hour or something like that, and have you be able to really lay the whole thing out for us. So thanks for giving us a call, Jim, letting us know. Tell everybody we said hi, and best wishes and congratulations on this effort. It's a great thing you've done. It really is.
Well, it's folks out in Phoenix did it, so we just are on the receiving end. So and the people on the radio made it happen. So folks like you guys, this is great.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, guys.
Bye now. Ah, wonderful effort going on there. That makes me feel good. Warms the cockles of my heart, as they say, wherever the cockles are in there. I'm not sure. Let's go over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Susan in Columbia City.
Hi, Susan.
It's wonderful to hear that the truck's got there. I'm hoping Sarge will get pictures to either me or Gene, and then we can get them up on the blog so people can see the trucks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
What I really called about was the thing with our competitor's show. I won't lower myself to mentioning. I agree with you about him. The reason I called in is because I happen to think this whole brouhaha, a lot of people are going to be tuning into him to see what everything's going on about, and it's going to give him a ratings bump, and I'm sad about that.
Oh, sure.
I wish it wouldn't, because I don't think he's worth it.
Well, he's opened his mouth, and I just had to respond, and I'm looking through here. Let me just give people some examples right here. He said back in 1993, and these are exact quotes from his shows, "Yeah, it's cold out, but you think these people could figure out how to get out of it? How about getting a job?" In 1993. Now, why, a lot of these homeless folks are Vietnam veterans. We've turned our back on these people after they gave to the country. What's wrong with this picture? And then, quote from 1994, "The American farmer's hat is bent from being stuck in the mailbox waiting for his government check. But now, this country can't survive without the American farmer. We aren't just subsidizing the farmer. We're making it possible for every American to purchase food." Well, and here's one last one. In 1995, "Why should I have to take care of somebody down the street?" This one's particularly telling to me. "Why should I have to take care of somebody down the street because I'm successful and they have failed?" Now, he says, "The healthcare industry and the lack of coverage for millions of Americans has to be on the table. We need a universal package." You don't change your spots that much.
Oh, no, you don't. Anyway, I'm going to get off the phone.
All right, thanks for calling.
I'll let you get back.
Thanks for calling.
You have a nice day.
Yeah, bye now. I just don't like somebody saying that they're something that some of us know they're not. And if I sound whatever mood I'm in about that, why, then so be it. But that's the way I see it, and that's the way it is, I can assure you. Anyway, where are we at here? On our... all right, one last break for the day, another song for Valentine's Day for all you Eva Cassidy fans.
Couldn't call my own. thrill that I am never.
Ah, yes, Eva Cassidy, the late, great Eva Cassidy, with a Valentine song for some of you. You still have time to give us a call today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Say, so I do want to address the Carter Doctrine subject that we had up here a while back. There's quite a difference between what the Carter Doctrine says and what Bush is doing right now. I don't think it's in any way, there is no connection between the Carter Doctrine and what Bush is doing right now. So there is no connection with Democrats saying, well, they back the Carter Doctrine but not Bush. There's not a problem with going those two directions with that. And most especially because Carter did this. The Soviet troops were in Afghanistan, and the reason the doctrine came out is because the Soviet troops in Afghanistan posed a, quote, grave threat to the free movement of Middle East oil. He proclaimed that document to be sure that any attempt by an outside force to gain control of the Persian Gulf region will be regarded as an assault on the vital interest of the United States of America. Such an assault will be repelled by any means necessary, including military force. Well, fine. But that is not what is going on now. We didn't go in there to stop the oil from flowing to the United States. We went in there for entirely different reasons. If we went in there for any reason, we went in there to make sure all of the oil flows to the United States. So there is no connection whatsoever between the Carter Doctrine and the Bush Doctrine that we have now. So it's a moot point to try and connect the two. They're just not connected at all. I agree that we would have had every right to go in there and protect our interest to keep the oil flowing to the United States legally. But we certainly didn't have any right to go in and invade a sovereign country that had not attacked us, and no one was cutting off the oil. This wasn't a deal where we had to go in there to keep the oil flowing, because that just wasn't the case. So I just wanted to make that clear. There is no connection between the two. None at all. 866-546-5254. You still got a few moments to call in on the show if you'd like. 866-546-5254. What's going to happen in Iran? I don't know. I get so much email every day. What do I think going to happen? You know, I'm extremely wary of a military campaign. Any kind of a military campaign against Iran's nuclear infrastructure. And I really believe that if military action is taken against that infrastructure, there's not going to be anything like what they're saying surgical about the proceedings. The airstrikes and any airstrikes that would be associated with that kind of planning suggest that such a maneuver, in addition to hitting a great number of atomic development targets, a lot of them, it would have to take out a whole lot of Iran's air defenses, like they did in Iraq, to clear a path to the target. It'd be a big operation, probably taking many days, And Iran would strike back with whatever it could. This wasn't like this Iraqi group. We went in, they all stuck up their hands in here and said, we give up. Oh, no, this isn't the same. Not at all. They could attack our U.S. fleet that are over there now. Commercial ships. They've got some anti-ship missiles. And some of them are going to survive airstrikes. And they could also launch whatever ballistic and medium-range missiles that survive an assault. That's some targets around the Gulf region that they could hit. So, you know one of them, what one of them would be. Let's head on over to the phone over at 9-2. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is William Hollywood.
Hi.
How are you doing? I just wanted to bring up that this, you were just talking about Iran again, and did you happen to see Bush's press conference today?
Saw about half of it.
Half of it. Yeah, you know what my thoughts are is right now the congressmen are doing their five-minute speeches, each one individually, about, you know, this resolution, non-binding resolution. And then if you watched Bush's press conference today, he brought up Iran again. And he brought up now it's basically at the troops, and it basically he doesn't matter to him whether it came from who it came from in Iran, these weapons, supposed, you know, IEDs. And my thoughts seem to swing towards the fact that the more they pressure him, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but it seems like the more they pressure him, he seemed like he was getting more agitated by the minute because they were asking those type of questions, that it's just going to push him even closer to, you know.
He just doesn't like to be questioned. You know, he's just a type of a little weasel that, you know, how dare you press me for an answer? How dare you? You know, you're lucky I even let you ask me questions. That's how he acts to me.
Right. It just seemed like the way he stormed out of there at the end, he had to go get lunch.
Yeah.
And stormed out of there at the end. It's, I almost pictured him going to Cheney and says, let's push this thing towards Iran a little quicker here, you know?
Well, I think they've got their timeline, and I think they've got it all planned. I would be shocked if they don't. God help us if they do it. But it seems to me like they're determined to do it. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
Well, me too. I think about it, and I keep seeing, you know, ups and downs on it. You know, you've probably seen it too, where some people say, oh, it's just not going to happen. But most people seem to think it would, you know. I mean, that's just the impression I get from going on the Internet.
Oh, no, there's a whole lot of those right-wingers that are, you know, they're hoping. They're hoping that it happens. They want it to happen. He's got plenty of backing from the neocons, no question about that.
Right. Yeah, I hope it doesn't happen, but it's just with these carrier groups going out there, and I heard something, I guess, two air bases and one in, I can't remember the countries off the top of my head. Bulgaria, I think, was one, and there's another one that they're putting air bases and refueling tanks, you know, for aircraft.
Oh, sure, sure. Say, I got to run. We're down at the end of the time here, just about out of time. Good to hear from you out in Hollywood, and give us a call again. We'll be back tomorrow.
Very good.
Thanks.
Okay, have a good day.
Okay. And I do want to say a special happy Valentine's, everybody. I want to thank Billy Shears for the great Valentine's Day music today. We had some nice little slow love ballads for you and your sweetheart. Hope you can enjoy Valentine's Day in the way that it was meant to be enjoyed. Hope everybody has somebody to love, and that's what some of this being on this earth is all about, is to love and be loved. And it's a great feeling, that's for sure. Well, we're going to be back tomorrow here on the Guy James Show. It's Thursday tomorrow, and we'll let you just talk all you want to tomorrow. But give us a call on the show. Don't have anybody scheduled for an interview right now. We may later on, I'm not sure. But thanks for listening today. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.